Hello, it is July 3rd, 2017. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 649 of the Will Leach Experience podcast here on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and thank you for spending part of your day with me. Sorry we missed Allison last week. Allison, you were on jury duty. Did you give them the chair? You gave them the chair, right?
I got out of it. I got dismissed. I know. I felt guilty after I gave my excuse that, which was true, that I had to be in New York the next morning and my flight was at 9 a.m. And so, yeah, I felt kind of bad. I didn't do my civic duty, but I did show up, you know. Yes. And
The next crime that takes place in the greater Houston area, I'm going to hold you personally responsible for, because you did not take that person off the street and put them in jail where they belonged.
It was actually like an injury case. And, you know, once you're in the room and the lawyers are there and they're sitting there with the clients, you know, so that, I mean, you're looking at them and you're like, you know, these are real people and you do have an obligation to make yourself available to help out in this situation. And they seem like both perfectly nice people. And it hits home more when you're actually in that room.
Absolutely.
Than when you're like, you get the summons, you're like, you know, I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh my God. I have to do it now because if I reschedule, you can only reschedule once and I know I'll be rescheduled for October and then I'm in big trouble. Then I'm just going to have to take the fine because I can't serve jury duty in October. So I took the risk. The judge was like looking at me like, why would you not reschedule if you have a flight in the morning? And I tried to explain to him. It all worked out. It's fine.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, by the way. I got called in Brooklyn a few years ago, and I did the same thing everybody else did. Oh, I can't believe I have to do this. How do I get out of this? How do I get this? And then I get in there, and I realize, wow, I would be such a schmuck if I tried to get out of this. Like, you feel like that's back when, you know, you could believe in the promise of America. So,
right.
You felt like, you know, you could go and do something, and you were trying to make a difference, and it would have felt untoward and bad to try to get out of it.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I do have to say in my defense, like, even though, like, I mean, there are things that you can say when you're going through, when they're questioning the jury, the potential jurors. I mean, there were definitely people in there that were saying exactly what they needed to say to not be picked.
But it feels lame. When you're in there, it feels like you're not serving your country in the right way.
Yeah.
How little sacrifices we make to do things. Again, but to be fair, that was back when I believed in the promise of America. So that was a long time.
Well, the thing was that I wasn't going to do what they were doing. Like, I could have absolutely done that.
I know.
Yeah.
Because we're good Americans.
And I was like, I'm going to take a chance and I'm going to be an honest person here. But I, you know, I told him exactly, you know, he's like, who do you work for? And then I felt really stupid because then I had to like blurt out like Major League Baseball and everyone's like, ooh, you know, it was the whole thing was just kind of embarrassing. But anyway, the next time I get a summons, I am going to complete my civic duty and I'm going to be on that jury.
Yes. And give him the chair. That's the most important thing.
Yes.
Don't give him the chair. He gets the death penalty and capital punishment. I'm just kidding. Anyway. Okay. So that would get me off that trial. Probably. I would just say we've talked jury duty too much. So it's the halfway point. It's we're almost at the All-Star break. We're both going to be in Miami. Your schedule is always so crazy. And my schedule is always so crazy when we're there that we're going to try to get a podcast in during All-Star week. But just in case we don't, we're going to do a little mid-season report where we're going to look at kind of at each division, what's happened in the first half, what we expect to happen in the second half, general kind of takeaways. We are at the midway point. Once again, one of my favorite things about the baseball season is because the All-Star break comes in mid-July, we're like 90 games into the season when the All-Star break comes. So like we're at the halfway point now. But it doesn't feel that way. That's the All-Star break point, is that they always do that. So I am ready. What we're going to do is we're going to go through each division and see, just have a little note on each, and which teams you would buy out of the division and which teams you would sell. So are you ready?
I am ready.
Yeah, it's not really not that hard to get ready for this. Like, okay, hang on. I need a break. We just edited out Allison having to sit down and take deep breaths for like 15 minutes. It's that difficult what I've asked to do. That's not true. Okay, so we start with the American League East because we have an East Coast bias because we are part of the media elite. The generally speaking, the way you look at the division now, two teams are under 500. Toronto had that little lip where they kind of hopped back up a little bit. They've fallen back. Baltimore looked like they were about to completely fall apart, and they're still one game under 500. Tampa Bay's made a nice little run. The Yankees, of course, with the story of the first half, have now cooled down a little bit. And the Red Sox, as many expected before the season, have taken over first place. Let's go. Some divisions are just going to be all like, we could ignore the White Sox. But in this division, do you think Toronto, starting with Toronto and Baltimore, do you think they are done? Do you think there's any path for them getting back in this?
No, Toronto, no, I don't. Baltimore is a game and a half out of the wild card. I mean, you know, Toronto's only 4.5 games out of the wild card, but I have a little bit more confidence in Baltimore, even though Toronto might even have a better team. But for some reason, I just feel like Baltimore has something a little bit extra that they might be able to get back in it. But, you know, I'm just kind of standing pat if I'm both of those teams. I'm not like, you know, I mean, that's the thing we have to remember about the trade deadline is it's not like if you're not in a race that you have to like get rid of people. I mean, you can just have a sucky year and then come back the next year, you know, try to tweak things over the offseason. So I don't see Baltimore or Toronto making the playoffs. If that's the question.
Yeah, I don't see it either. Toronto in particular, they look like they're one bag a week away from selling everything. And I think once that happens, then they're really – I think it's something I always should keep in mind when I do these midseason predictions is that right now two teams may be close, but whatever their contention windows are, if they're on the way up, they may buy and whoever's buyer and sellers and so on. I think Baltimore kind of has no choice but to keep kind of plugging forward. But Toronto, I think, might fold. Tampa Bay has actually been one of our few buyers this year. They got Echeverria to bring in. Hardly a huge impact, but certainly a nice guy for them to bring in. Do you see Tampa Bay? Is this who they are? Are they like a slightly above 500 team? The Percota projection systems are always very high on the race. It actually gives them a 36.6% chance to make the playoffs right now, which is kind of amazing. That seems awfully high. But that said, if you look at the wild card, they are one of the two wild card teams right now. Do you think Tampa Bay has a legitimate chance to be one of the two wild card teams, or even in a crazy world, to catch Boston?
Yeah, I think because I don't think that they'll catch Boston, but I think that the teams that are in wildcard contention right now basically are all like really unexciting, not sure things. There's a lot of teams that are below 500 that have a chance to win the wild card. There's teams that are one game over 500. So it's just like a really weird year in that you have like a couple of elite teams and everybody else is just kind of beatable, decent and impressive and beatable at the same time. So yeah, I mean, I think that the Rays should unless that, you know, something just like catastrophic happens between now and July 31st. I think that they should keep plugging away, see if they can do little tweaks to improve the team. You know, this is way above their expectations. When I was spring training, I was there for like 4 hours, but I talked to a few people within the organization. And there were no expectations. They're like, we're not going to be very good. This is going to be kind of a bummer of a year. I'm sure, you know, a very pleasant surprise. I mean, I'm looking at their road record. They're below 500 and they're, you know, significantly above 500 at home. And again, it's just one of those years where there's just nobody that's just going to blow everybody away unless you're Houston in the American League. And so everybody has a chance. So go Tampa Bay.
Yeah, that is wild. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams within two games of the second wild card spot, which is absolutely wild.
And I can see that continuing. I can see that like still being the case, like at least 6 teams still being in September with like, you know, being like 2 games over 500. It'll be like the year the Padres won their division with an 82-80 record. I mean, you know, why not? Go for it. I'd rather see like 2 mediocre teams battling it out for that, you know, playing one game wild card game than the 102 win team that ended up in second place because the division leader won 103 games and then they get totally screwed if they don't win that game. You know, I'd rather it be like 2 teams with like 550 winning percentages. And then I don't care if one of them doesn't make it because they aren't all that impressive anyway. I always just feel bad about that really great team. Like the, you know, like we've talked about like the Pirates and from a couple of years ago when they had a great season and they won and done and they were out. I just don't think that's fair, but yeah, I mean, Tampa Bay, like being a wild game, go for it. Cause I won't, you know, my heart won't bleed either way if they don't make it.
And then we have the Yankees. The Yankees really look solid. In fact, their runs differential is actually a little bit better than their record. Pitching still seems to be an issue, but it does look like they have so many backs. Now they brought up Clint Frazier, a.k.a. he's got long hair. Can he be a Yankee? The Yankees are so weird. When it comes to the Yankees, I still feel like the Red Sox is the best team in this division. But I don't think the Yankees are going anywhere. You know, I think they played above their heads a little bit. But there's still a ton of talent on this team. And they certainly have the option to go in and get some pitching if they need it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they could. And they definitely were playing, like you say, above their heads like the first couple months of the season. But when you're going to be playing, you know, and I mean, look at that division. I'm sure I haven't study their schedule, but I'm sure they have a lot of games against Baltimore and Toronto coming up. You know, they did look very good against Houston this past weekend, except for the first game when they just steamrolled them. But yeah, I mean, they have, you know, a farm system to dip into, and they have some leverage when it comes to the trade deadline. They've got some good players. They don't have dominant pitching, but who does? Yeah. I mean, it's just like you go through the teams and you're like, ugh. So, so yeah, they're gonna totally be in it. September is gonna be fun. September is going to be really, really fun because almost everybody is in this thing.
Yeah, if there's ever a year where that last day of the year where all the games are played at the same time really ends up being pretty wild. We had a little bit last year, but not much. This could be a pretty great one. And then to me, Boston reminds me a little bit of the Dodgers. They're not as good as the Dodgers, but they're a team that has not had a lot of stuff go perfect for them so far. But they're still now three games up. It feels they've won four in a row. They feel like a team that once of all the teams in this division, they feel like the ones that are most solid.
Yeah. I mean, we thought that like going into the season, right? So everyone was just like picking them to run away with the division. And then the Yankees had that really dominant stretch of like 2 months. So then we got all excited that this might actually be like a division race. And so it will. But Boston was kind of underachieving. And, you know, when we talked about how, like, they never really replaced David Ortiz in that offense in the lineup, I don't know why everybody was so shocked that things weren't just going swimmingly without that bat in the lineup. But, yeah, I mean, it's a really good team. Really, I mean, that's where the good pitching is. If you have to pick a team that has the good pitching, it's the Red Sox. And they're going to be fine. I mean, David Price, I'm a little worried about him just because I think, you know, he's going to maybe mentally play himself out of the city. I don't know what's going to happen there. Of course, his contract won't allow him to do that, but he seems to be turning into a little bit of a head case, which is unfortunate because he's like this really great guy that everybody likes, and it looks like Boston is going to just kind of ruining him.
I got to say, if I had to deal with the Boston media every day, I'd probably go a little nuts too. Like I know it's part of the job. I'm not excusing it because I know it's part of the job. You have to deal with the media. I'm not saying you don't. But maybe that's why you shouldn't assign with Boston in the first place, because those people are insane. Those people are absolutely insane.
They are. I mean, they are in a way, like, if you're going to read all that stuff. But the only difference between, like, playing in a small market and a big market is the volume of reporters that you're addressing after a game. But if you're going to sit there and, like, read every single thing, then you're kind of asking for it. So if you could block out the noise, it's just a difference between there being six people around you and there being 15 people around you. And when you look individually, the people that are covering the team are not like these vultures who are like screaming at him post game.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, every little thing like matters, and they pounce on every little thing, and you'll get a whole column out of something that's like kind of innocuous or sometimes the big things, you know, when the season isn't going well. But it's on you to just block some of that out. I mean, just dude, seriously, just don't read it. Don't read it. Don't read the coverage. You're good.
Except for our stuff. Please, everyone read our stuff. Everyone read everything that we do and listen to this podcast. But other stuff, shut it out. Just us and the Players Tribune, David Price.
Exactly.
All right, so we go to the Central. Not really too much to say about Detroit, the White Sox, other than I'm very curious to see if the Tigers trade Justin Verlander and what they can even get for him. I'm kind of fascinated by that idea. He had the first game where he didn't have a strikeout the other day, which is maybe a little worrisome. But really, you're looking at the top three. Minnesota has been this really fun story all year, but look at this. Kansas City is, in fact, tied with them for second place in that division. Cleveland, again, a team that's again, talked to this a little about Boston. We'll talk about a little bit with Los Angeles later, and even maybe with the Cubs, a team that has struggled a little bit that everyone thought was going to win the division by a lot, but now has kind of things have stabilized and they're starting to kind of take over in that division. Two questions. Start with the first one. We'll do this one first. Do you think Cleveland comfortably has this division? Do you think they kind of pull away in the second half?
Yeah, I'm looking at their home record, which is 18-21. So that's going to change. I think that they're going to start winning more at home. They're 10 games over on the road. So they have a lot of kind of market correction to be doing here. And that is that their home record, I think they will end over 500. And yes, I mean, they're the best team in the division. They have been this whole time. They still are. It's kind of fun that it's not that they're not running away with it. I think that that makes it more interesting, but no, there's nothing that tells me that like Kansas City is going to end up winning that division. Certainly Minnesota is not going to, Cleveland has the experience, and I've harped on this. I believe that has a lot to do with how successful you were in August and September. Is, you know, if you've done this before, I believe that's why the Dodgers have the advantage in their division. And yes, the Cleveland Indians are going to probably, I say they're going to win this division by 6 games.
Wow. All right. Well, this is one of my favorite little factoids, by the way, about this division. And this goes to the second thing, which who we think is going to be better between Minnesota or Kansas City in the second half. Minnesota has the second best road record in baseball. That is an amazing stat. They're only behind Houston for the best road record in baseball. But they're 9 games under at home, which will not get it done. When you look at Minnesota or Kansas City, A, who do you think is going to be better the second half? And B, do you think either one of these is a legitimate wild card contender?
I think Kansas City. Yeah, I think they're better, and I think they are a legitimate wild card contender. I absolutely do. I don't think that they're it's hard to keep the same cast of characters together and still have that same success over time. But clearly, you know, with so many guys coming up for free agency and the fact that it sounds like Dayton Moore is gonna stick with this group, unless, again, something terrible happens between now and 3 weeks from now. I think that you look at the team, you're like, this is a good team. These are guys that have done this before. So I think that they are a legitimate wild card contender. Yes.
And Minnesota still feels like, it's weird because Minnesota feels like a team that should be like a few years away still. But those young players that we thought were going to come over and take over, like Buxton still isn't very good. Like, this is a ton of stuff they got to figure out. But to me, Minnesota is one of those teams generally in baseball. I feel like baseball's just a little bit better and a little healthier when Minnesota is doing well. So. Cheers to them in the second half. But I agree.
Well, go ahead. I mean, also really with the Twins, I mean, I see them as the like quintessential team that would have like a monumental collapse for like 3 weeks in the second half because they're not quite ready to do what they've been doing. And when the season wears on you, when you get to that crunch time, I believe that I can see them losing like, you know, 16 of 20 and falling out of it. And then, ending, you know, pretty strong, but it'd be too late. Like, that's where I think the Twins are. And then the next year they come back and they win like, you know, 88 games. I just see them as that kind of team.
That would be fun. So remember when Paul Molitor, everyone just assumed he was going to be fired like a week into the season. And here they are. So kind of plugging along.
Hard to fire Hall of Famers. That's why you got to be careful when you hire them. Hire the Hall of Famers. Unless you've decided you're never going to fire them. Yes. Okay, go on.
I think that's why one of the reasons that Ryan Sandberg, the Cubs never hired Ryan Sandberg when he like desperately wanted to be their manager for so long. And they got with the Phillies and it didn't work out. Smart. Those Cubs, they're pretty smart. Anyway. Okay, to the AL West. Obviously, Houston is running away with this thing. I guess my specific question about Houston, do you think, as someone that lives there and is close to them, do you think they will make a big, huge pitching second half trade, or do you think they'll make kind of nominal moves?
I think they'll make nominal moves. It's a very interesting conundrum that they're going to find themselves in because they really don't need that, you know, horse in the rotation to get them to the division title. They don't even need Dallas Keuchel. In my opinion, they should not bring Dallas Keuchel back until August, which is amazing. That speaks volumes of what the Astros have done so far is they do not need their ace pitcher really to win this division. So in terms of like their bullpen, there's going to be some problems there because they just are going to run out of juice, I think, if they keep on this track because they don't have a lot of starters that are actually getting through like 6 innings. So what do you do with the deadline? And you really can't give away a lot of your talent for somebody like Quintana because it's not – I just think that that's something that Jeff Luhnow doesn't want to do. They need to get an arm in the bullpen, and I think that's where they're going to go. I think that's where they're going to concentrate on is just fortifying the bullpen, possibly getting, you know, a starter that doesn't, like, blow you away but could help. But I think that there's more of a guarantee that they're going to get a reliever than there is that they're going to get a starter.
Yeah, it's weird. There's not a lot of great pitchers out there. Like, it's funny. We still talk about Quintana. We still talk about how, oh, yeah, Quintana's the guy that's going to go. But, like, he has not been good this year.
No.
And because we spent so much time from the beginning of the year expecting him to be the big arm, I just don't think there's anybody there that amazing you want to give a ton up for. And I don't know if the pitching market is going to be like that. It's funny. We saw last year how Relief is actually more expensive kind of at the deadline than starters, which
Yeah.
is kind of
Oh, yeah.
counterintuitive, but it does kind of makes it makes sense in this regard. I just don't see, I think you're right. Also, I think if there were a Chris Sale type out there at the deadline, I can see the Astros really trying to dig in for that, but there isn't. So I feel like they're going to be smart about it because, again, like the Cubs, they are smart. Anyone else in this division? Oakland, I think, is fair to kind of say that they're done, but everyone else is still kind of in that wild card mix, including perhaps most intriguingly, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, who are somehow at 500, which is just a little bit below where they were when Mike Trout went out. He's supposedly going to be back perhaps as soon as right before the All-Star break or right after. Do you think, imagine, think about the hot takes, Allison. If
Yeah.
Trout comes back and the Angels do what they probably naturally should do, which is not be that good, like they're kind of overperforming a lot of ways. Imagine if Trout comes back, but then some of the pieces now that are kind of boosting them up higher than they should be, the bottom falls out. Will people blame Trout for it? Because this is the best player coming back in baseball to a team that I assume would be 10 games under 500 right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's an answer for that. We have to see how that plays out. I don't think that you can blame Trout if he comes back and does Trout-like things. But yeah, it is. It's an interesting phenomenon when you take that big name out of the lineup and then the other guys, I don't know if it's seeing pitches differently. I don't know if they're being pitched differently. I don't know what it is. But other players kind of step up. And yeah, they're overachieving, but I don't know. They're kind of good when they're healthy. So, why not? I mean, you know, we're at a point now where you have a team like the Angels that have the veteran presence and have, you know, an established team that you have to think, well, they're probably not going to fold. Like I believe that the Twins are going to fold or the maybe the Rockies are going to fold. But I don't know, the Angels, I mean, it's a crappy division. So, they still have a lot of games with the Mariners and the Rangers and the A's, and you know, they're absolutely beatable. And so I think they're lucky to be in the division that they are, and it might help them.
Yeah, and it's funny, I would have not thought this because I've generally been on the assumption, including Oakland, that for the next 5 years moving forward, the Angels are the team that's maybe in the worst case in this division. But I think you can maybe make that argument for the Mariners, not because this is, you know, this again, this is the next in a succession of years of this is the year for Seattle. They're all in for this year, and
Yeah.
they're once again under 500 and not really doing anything. And this is a team that is just getting older and older and older, and don't have like a Mike Trout guy to entirely build around and at least try to like convince to stay. I don't know, man. I feel like if the Mariners can't do it now, they may have to completely blow this thing up.
Well, and they've been like so banged up in their rotation, right? So they just basically like lost all of their starting pitchers at some point. And they've made more trades than any team in the last like 2 years. And they just, that doesn't guarantee anything. That doesn't mean that the formula is going to work. But you look at like the offense, they've got, you know, Cruz and Cano, and they have like the core. But the core doesn't mean anything if you can't, you know, build around it with a winning formula. So, yeah, I think this is my last year that I'm going to be like going into a season saying that the Mariners are always going to be that scary team to keep your eye on. I think I'm kind of over that.
Yeah, I agree. And then Texas still feels, it's funny, like they got off to that bad start, they're still kind of rumbling around. You think they're about to make that step forward, and then they make a step back. I don't know. I'm kind of almost done believing in them. And there's been an argument for a while that, you know, if a team decided to sell at the deadline, the one big arm would be Darvish. Like the one guy, it's hard to imagine them trading them to the Astros. But if that, when there's no huge starters out there, if they decide to do that, maybe that's what they do. I feel like they're almost too much into contending. That's the weird thing about the wild card in the American League. It's giving a lot of teams a lot of more hope than maybe they even should have.
The Rangers have said that they're probably not going to trade Darvish. I mean,
Yeah.
that's
But if they lose 10 in a row, if they
they
fall
want
out
to
of this
retain
thing,
him as a free agent.
yeah,
So
then play him in the offseason. Pay him in the offseason for crying out loud. Do the Chapman. Well, don't do
here's
the
the
Chapman.
thing. Here, you know, and he's an elite arm, so you can get a return on him. But pending free agents, and that's the thing that's
Yeah.
kind of the myth that I feel like sort of needs to be debunked a little bit. And that's that you can rebuild your organization by trading your pending free agents, guys that you're losing in 2 months. And that's not how you replenish your farm system. You replenish it by your own drafting and your own scouting, and possibly if you trade a superstar with 2 years of arbitration eligibility to go, and then you can get a return on that. But it's like I look at the Royals, and it's like Dayton Moore is not going to get this huge haul where he's just going to have this like sparkling farm system if he trades all of these big names, because the value doesn't come back as much as I think, like, you know, Joe Fan sort of sees it. It's not how it works. And so, you know, you just I don't know. If the Rangers are serious about retaining Darvish, then I kind of understand why they'd hang on to them, as opposed to getting back. You know, let's put it this way. The Astros, when they were getting rid of all those guys in 2012, and it's like they're making a trade every day, they were getting rid of every single veteran player on that team that they possibly could. And really, when you look at it today, Chris Devinsky is pretty much the only one out of all those players they got that is actually impacting the team today of those trade chips. Everybody else is pretty much somebody that they've, you know, signed from the outside or developed through the organization themselves.
Yeah, I think so. But as long as they don't lose him, or if you don't trade him, you better sign him for next year, because then you missed out.
But and that's the thing. I mean, we could go on about that because they have a really terrible farm system. Like, they're declining. And so they have to say, do we want to spend all this money on somebody who is just going to be costing us a lot of money while we're not a good team? So that'll be very interesting to see what happens with them.
And you wonder if there's an equation with that with their new ballpark, too, if that makes a difference as well. I keep forgetting that they have a new ballpark. I still haven't been to the old ballpark, so I better get that before they get rid of it. Okay, over to the National League. A lot more clarity in the wild card picture, and certainly a lot of clarity in the National League East, where the Nationals, who are a team that certainly has its fair share of problems, their bullpen issues are well documented to the point that, you know, where basically players are actively saying we have. I think the quote one player gave Barry Svugla from the Washington Post. Apologies for saying his name badly. I love his book, The Grind, by the way. Anyway, I'm just they said we have to win these games three times, which is a very discouraging thing. They're kind of openly revolting against their bullpen. Obviously, they're going to make a move at some point, but they're in this kind of weird spot you talked about with Houston a little bit. They don't. Like, Washington doesn't actually have to have a great bullpen or even a halfway decent bullpen to win this division. So then all their moves are kind of set for the playoffs a little bit. Do you think, like, if you're Washington and now Trey Turner's out, I still think even with Trey Turner out, this is still a team that's going to win this division. They're only 7.5 up in this division, which is a little bit less than you might think. But I still don't see any way that Washington is going to run away with this division, even if they don't make a bullpen trade.
Right. That's why this whole saga is so fascinating, because they're not going to need to tweak the bullpen to get to the playoffs, to win the division. They're going to get swept in the division series, most likely, if they do not fix that bullpen. So because what's going to happen in the playoffs is that they're not going to be scoring 7 runs a game, to where then their bullpen comes in and gives up 3 runs and they still win the game. So that's the formula for the regular season. You get in the postseason, there's not a lot of high scoring games in the postseason. They do happen. Absolutely, they do happen. Sometimes there's even a blowout. But for the most part, because these are all the teams that have all the good pitching, you're going to score 4 runs in a game. And so then if you give up 3, if your bullpen gives up 3, that means your starting pitcher can't give up any. And they're going to be in big trouble. So, and look at those Braves. Can we just look at the Braves?
Yes, I want to talk about the Braves for a second. Yeah.
Yeah, so they have this formula to where they're going to be pretty good like next year and beyond. But there's some feeling, you know, in some circles that the Braves could actually make a push for this thing. All this young talent, these things have kind of come together. They might start. They could definitely like kind of go on some kind of streak and make things uncomfortable for the Nationals. They won't surpass them, I don't think. They can make things uncomfortable. Then the pressure comes on the Nationals, and then what happens? I'm watching the Nats and the Cardinals last night, and I'm seeing Matt Albers coming in to finish out the game for the Nationals. And I get it. They were up like 7-0 at the time, 7-1. That is so bad even happening. It could be a lot more interesting of a division than I think we gave it credit for 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Braves for a second, because it's funny. You know, I have generally just gone under the assumption that I was very down on the Mets coming into this season. So their disappointment is not a major surprise to me. But I've actually gone into the thing. I feel like they've got DeGrom and nobody else in the rotation. Everyone's so hurt. For what it's worth, you know, they're 2 games behind the Braves, a game behind the Cardinals, if you're doing a wild card thing, 2.5 behind the Cubs. Like, if Colorado falls back, which, you know, they've certainly have fallen. They're in kind of in free fall right now. If they're unable to kind of pull that back together, all of a sudden that second wild card in the AL West is kind of interesting because, you know, the Cardinals are still going to be, we'll get to the Central in a second. The Cardinals are still going to be hanging around if the Braves can get hot. And if the Mets, like the Mets feel like they have had this disaster of a season so far. And they're still only five games under. And if Colorado can fall enough to where being around 500 gets you in the conversation, then the Mets are a little interesting. But then I think the Braves are really interesting.
Yeah, the Braves are interesting because they're moving in the right direction. They're moving upward, and they're making good decisions. And they don't have a PR disaster surrounding them every day like the Mets do. And they have extremely bright people that are running things. And they know how to build an organization. So this is not surprising to me. This what they're doing right now. Actually, let me just say what they were doing in the first couple of months, which was like losing at an alarming rate. That's what was surprising me. I kind of thought that they would be pretty interesting and decent this season. So I didn't think that they were going to finish over 500, but I certainly thought that like the trajectory was definitely moving up. They're going to be a perennial contender within a couple of seasons, and boy, that they could make this very interesting this year.
Okay, then we go to the NL Central. The NL Central, of course, you know, we've talked about Boston, we've talked about Cleveland, we've talked about Los Angeles, talked about Washington. These teams, particularly Los Angeles, Cleveland, and Boston, teams that we all assumed were going to win the division, but maybe got off to a little bit of slow starts. They didn't go work out, but you still, eventually, they got themselves back to first and got themselves back in the position that everyone thought they would be. We are still waiting for the Cubs to do that, and not just are we waiting for the Cubs to do that. The Cubs have had all sorts of discord. The Miguel Montero stuff has been a mess. I still don't entirely understand why they had to go to the White House again and why there's not actually a little bit of a backlash against that. But that might just be Cardinal Bob talking over here. So I'll move over from that a little bit.
Let me just say, like, the Ricketts are very much Trump supporters, and I sort of felt like, and we don't want this to dominate our conversation, mm-hmm. but you kind of do what your boss wants you to do. And when they went to the White House 4 days before Obama was out of office, the reasons why they did that. You kind of had a feeling like that didn't surprise me that there was going to be a White House visit. It started off basically with Joe Madden getting together with the representatives from his hometown in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. But you sort of felt like it didn't surprise me that the Ricketts made this whole thing happen.
I'm not blaming Chris Bryant for it.
It made your stomach turn. I mean, it made my stomach turn.
It's a weird, that has never happened in any other team, in any other sport, where they've gone and visited two different presidents with the same team. It's just literally never happened. It's unprecedented. There's no reason to do it. And I guarantee you there were players on that team. Like, I'm sure Jake Arrieta, who was not actually there, the guy I thought would have been most happy to see Trump, was not actually there. But it was just strange. It was just a strange thing to do. It's just weird, but whatever. I mean, again, you know, we've all lost faith in the American promise.
At the end of the day, you always do what your boss tells you to do. We'll move on from that. That's how this works.
I suppose. So when we look at the Cubs, obviously they've had lots of issues. They're at 500 right now. It's funny. They look at the two teams in this division. Just a while back, remember Cincinnati was in first place after a month. They've obviously fallen back. Pittsburgh has started to fall back now as well. The Cardinals have made a step forward. They are back to only three games under 500. After they won that series against the Diamondbacks, I said if they could go 7-3 in this homestand against Washington, Miami, and the Mets, the Cardinals would be at 500 at the All-Star break. And they're currently 2-1. They won 2-3 of Washington over the weekend. Miami and the Mets have obviously struggled. Considering how badly the Cardinals have played, to be at 500 at the midway point at the All-Star break would be ecstatic. But you look at the Cubs, they have one All-Star, Wade Davis of all people. They have one All-Star. Everything, they're having all this discord, they're having all this mess. This is not a team, you don't even look at their peripherals. Like, you looked at there are teams you look at the peripherals when the Red Sox were struggling, the Dodgers were struggling. You still, like, their runs created against the runs scored against runs allowed. They looked like a team that was going to come back. The Cubs don't. They don't look like a particularly exceptional team at all. The Brewers don't either. The Cardinals don't either. But we keep expecting the Cubs to just floor it at some point. When do we accept that maybe this year is just not last year?
I think we've accepted it. I mean, this year is definitely not like last year. I don't know that there's even mathematically that it could end up that way at this point. But there, you know, you when you look at a pitching staff, a starting staff that has a lot of veteran guys and who have pitched a lot of postseasons and have a lot of miles on their arms, you know, there's always that question about when does this come to a close? And they've had. You know, guys having down years in their lineup. Kyle Schwarber is in the minor leagues. I mean, Miguel Montero talked himself right out of the city, and so they might just be a mediocre team. I could see them having I definitely see them ending the year with a good record. I don't know if it'll be enough to overtake the NL Central, but they're just, you know, they're just kind of average. I mean, they're just not that good. And I can see them like kind of retooling things, like tweaking things in the offseason. I can see Theo doing the right thing for the team in the offseason and coming back next year pretty strong. But yeah, they're just, they're just not very good.
Yeah, they're not great. The Cardinals aren't very good. The Brewers, yeah. And I really don't like the Brewers certainly have some good tools, but they have no, like their pitching is not only the pitching is not that good, they don't have a lot of opportunities to make their pitching better. So, right. They're not going to go trade like some of their best prospects coming up for pitching that may not even be around for them to trade for anyway. So, I feel like the reason it's a little frustrating to me because I look at this Cubs team and I'm like, I don't think this team is that great. But I certainly understand why everyone still feels that the Cubs are going to run away with this division because nothing about the Brewers pitching has all these issues. The Cardinals, they've come around a little bit. Starting pitching is still going to be their route. I still feel you can make an argument of the three teams in this division, the Cardinals have the best starting pitching. So that's the Cardinals' advantage there. But I find it hard to argue with people that don't think, even though I don't think this Cubs team is that great and certainly not close to what it was last year, I still feel like they win this division.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did. The Brewers, I think what could be a difference maker is the Brewers, I don't think will make any deadline moves either way. They'd be silly to do so. Their plan is more long-term than that. And I can see that the Cubs could do something and maybe that would make the difference. And yeah, I mean, you look at the Cubs, you look at the roster, you're like, this doesn't really make any sense. And they could definitely have I see them, if there's of all the teams, I see them having the best August, which is the hardest month to get through. Any baseball player will tell you it's not September, it's August. That's the most difficult month to get through. I could see the Cubs thriving in that way and sort of pulling away a little bit.
Yeah, well, we will see, but I certainly, I would like to see, and this brings us over to the West. Everyone loves the Colorado story. I think I wrote earlier in a piece in which I misspelled a bunch of Rockies players' names that the Rockies were the most likely team to fall back. We've seen that a little bit now. We've seen the Dodgers they're 7 games up on the Rockies right now. Like the Dodgers have clearly kind of floored it here. And Arizona is a team that looks like they're not going anywhere either. I find it hard to me, if there's a one thing that's most likely on the books in the National League, it feels like Arizona will be hosting the wild card game. That just feels like something that's going to happen. Do you think Colorado is going to be able to hang on to that second wild card spot? They're 6 games up. They've got a good lead now, but they're really falling apart late going into the All-Star break.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's the unfortunate thing is because the Rockies still are probably better than a lot of these other teams that are closer in their divisions because and the Rockies are playing in the toughest division, and they're losing a lot of games against the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers, which is kind of derailing their season a little bit. I do think that they'll be able to hang on. I think that they will regroup and be able to, you know, piece together some kind of strings here every now and again. But no, it's been, I mean, my God, all of a sudden you just blink and they're 7 games back in the division. So, you know, I could see them cratering a little bit. I think it could go either way, but I just think it's really too bad because if you could put them in any of these other crappy divisions and anywhere else in baseball and they dominate, but they're in a situation where they've got a lot of games against two of the best teams in baseball. And that's the difference. I mean, I look at Houston and I'm like, you know, they have an amazing record and they are a fantastic team. They are also very flawed on the pitching side and they just have the advantage of playing in one of the weakest divisions. You put them somewhere else, you put them in the NL West and, you know, they're not winning all of these games. So, you know, poor Colorado, but I'm still on their bad bandwagon.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that maybe because we've been waiting for Colorado to fall off a little bit, we're saying, oh, well, here's this, they've lost 8 of 9 or however many they've lost. And we're all of the idea that like, well, this is the fall apart. This is the collapse that we were waiting for. even if they collapse, they still have to have another one of these just to start making the wild card race interesting. They've built up enough of a lead. I still feel like that. But and to me, we discussed the Dodgers for so long. The Dodgers feel like this is the year that we were waiting for the Dodgers to have, which is fine because the one thing that you knew you could always count on for the Dodgers was Clayton Kershaw being amazing, and he's merely been really awesome, which is a step down. The Dodgers look to me, not only do they have everything everywhere, I feel like they still, if they wanted to, they've got space for a big bat if they want to do that. They've got a lot of flexibility to move stuff. I feel like the Dodgers are most likely the team that's going to have the home field advantage throughout the National League in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you could see a Dodgers Indians World Series. It wouldn't surprise me.
That would be fun. Dodgers Indians, Dodgers Astros would be fun.
Dodgers Astros would be. I'm curious. I really am like curious to see like how that series would play out. To see how Houston would perform against a team like that. I think that Astros Nationals, Astros Dodgers. I just think it would be so interesting to see. You know, that's how good are they really? But you know, it's a long way till then.
Yes, it's a long way. So, all right. So last thing, I'm going to go ahead and make my predictions for the second half so we're on record here. So I'm going to do them first, so you got a second to formulate yours. When you look over the American League, I do think Boston wins the East. I think Cleveland wins the Central, and I think Houston wins the West, aka the three predictions I made before the season, still kind of hanging in. I do think that you're looking at a Yankees. I'll say Yankees Rays. I think Yankees Rays is a legitimate possibility for the wildcard game. Who would you take in the American League?
Well, same ones, Boston, Cleveland, Houston. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Wild card. Yankees for sure. I don't know. I'm going to go with the Royals on that.
Royals. That would be fun. I would like to see I like that pick. I would love to see the Royals make like one last kick. Cause yeah, well, once it's over for them, like this is the year they got all the free agents. Once all those guys, it's over. Like that's the end of the era. To see them make one more run. You're right. That would be really fun. I think I would enjoy seeing that. Particularly Royals and Yankees, which seems like it would be kind of a fun wild card game too. Very 70s old school. Okay, go to the National League. Washington, Los Angeles, like they're clear. It's funny, Los Angeles is so much better than Washington, but I still just can't imagine any way that those teams from the East could keep up with Washington, with the Nationals. Even if they start actually just having Harper throw in the bullpen, I feel like it's still, Washington still wins that. In the Central, it's weird because I don't want to be just default here. Come, that's got to be the Cubs. It's got to be the Cubs because I wish I believed more in the Brewers, the Cardinals, because I think the Cubs are vulnerable. Without question, I think they are vulnerable and I think they can be had. I just don't know if the Cardinals or the Brewers are the teams that can do it. So I'll take the Cubs and then I'll stick with Arizona and Colorado as the wild card.
Okay. I'm going Washington. I'm doing the same thing. I'm not just doing that because you picked it, but Washington, Cubs, Dodgers. Arizona, Colorado. I mean, you know, wouldn't that be fun if it was like Arizona, Milwaukee?
Yeah, Arizona, Milwaukee, Arizona, Atlanta, Arizona Cardinals. Obviously, would be incredible. But and everyone would love that. Okay, obviously, cool.
But I don't know. I'm gonna be the contrarian. I'm gonna go Arizona, Milwaukee.
Arizona, Milwaukee. See, I feel like if Milwaukee could hang on to win the wild card, they'll just win the Central. I just don't believe in the Cubs moving forward. I think there's something messed up with this team. I feel like the pitching is not put together. Schwarber's starting to hit, and to me, maybe that's the spark. Is he's just killing the ball in AAA right now? Maybe they bring him up, and that's what gets them all going again. Like that to me, that's the wild card in the situation. If they really get Schwarber going, and he becomes that guy that they now clearly need him to be. It's possible that like their second or third best hitter on this team right now is John Jay. Like that's not something you would have thought coming from the Cubs coming in this season. If they can get Schwarber going, I think that could be the thing that switches it. But I feel like otherwise, if the Brewers are going to hang on for a wild card, I think they might just win the division because I'm not sold on the Cubs at all. But all of us, of course, will be proven wrong with all of these things when it turns out that Miami takes an incredible run in the second half and we have a Miami Kansas City World Series. All right, Allison, as always, a blast. I hope to catch you when we are both in Miami for the All-Star break. We've been able to do that a couple of times the last couple of years. I look forward to that. But otherwise, safe travels. Enjoy your trip down to Miami, and hopefully I'll see you down there.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, as always, enjoy. Follow Allison on Twitter, AllysonFooter. She is awesome, super great. I'll be back with either her or probably someone from the All-Star Game. I'll be down there next week. Have a great week, everyone. Remember to review us on iTunes. The music is by the Sundogs. So on. Have a great week. See you in Miami.